This episode of The Y-Files is brought to you by Raid Shadow Legends. Gather round. This happened in Japan in January of 2004. Just past 11 on a Thursday night, Hasumi caught the last train home from work at Shin Hamamatsu. It was about a 33-minute trip, with a stop every few minutes, and she knew every station by heart. But tonight was different. About 20 minutes in, the train didn't stop once. 30 minutes, 40 minutes, the train just kept going, and Hasumi was getting nervous. Finally, 90 minutes later, the train stopped. Hasumi got off at Kisaragi Station. Hasumi was confused. She never heard of a Kisaragi Station. Well, that's because it doesn't exist. What?
Listen, I've been up 31 hours. Virgil's been transcribing my notes. We had to stop after 17 pages when his carbon claw kicked in. Reality is a simulation, and I have proof.
Is this a Blorpus thing?
This is a science thing. Our world is a poorly rendered knockoff of the premium universe running underneath it. We're in the Teemo universe. Think about it. The graphics here are meh. The lore is thin. There's no magic system. And the character design, ugh.
Here we go.
It's deeply, deeply uninspired.
You think people have bad character design? Have you seen yourself? You're a talking goldfish.
My design is flawless.
Have you seen people, human? They're vaguely oval. Limbs just kind of attached.
Whoever built this place shipped it without a proper QA/QC sprint.
Fine. What does the real universe look like?
Yeah, according to my notes, let me see. Ancient kingdoms, warring factions, champions forged from dark magic, and centuries of conflict.
A dark power waking up in the Mistwood after lying dormant for years.
Boss fights, dungeons, a PvP mode that actually matters.
AAA graphics, an entire realm on the edge of total corruption.
Laser strategy you can spend a lifetime...
You're describing Raid Shadow Legends.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
Well, the Beaver Brothers have been playing it for a week.
Wait, David.
They've been living in base reality this whole time and they didn't tell me?
No, they made me promise. They wanted to level up their clan before you found out.
Why, those filthy, shifty little rodents. Hang on. Did you just simulate today's sponsor?
I sure did. Raid Shadow Legends is a hit RPG hero collector played by millions worldwide on mobile, PC, and Mac. It features PvP battles, fantasy champions, and a massive campaign packed with lore, boss fights, and strategy. Raid just launched their newest global event, Web of Corruption. Log in 7 days before July 31st during the Valorant Chase, and you'll earn the brand new legendary champion Valorant the Equalizer completely free. Then log in for another 7 days to unlock extra gear and upgrades. Valorant hits entire groups, ignores enemy defense, and keeps your team alive with powerful buffs and debuffs. And as part of the event, take on Rala the Mourned in the limited-time event dungeon to earn pinpoint gear and other rewards. New players who download Raid using our link instantly unlock Ragash, a free legendary champion. Then enter promo code SUPERVICTORY to claim another free legendary, Pelops the Victor. Keep playing to unlock 3 epic champions just by leveling up. That's 3 legendaries and 3 epics, all free. Existing players use code PP500 for 200 energy, 400,000 silver, 50 multi-battle attempts, and 500 Plarium points. Click the link below or scan the QR code to download Raid and claim everything. Then join Hecklefish's clan, Fear the Crab Cat, and help him take down the clan boss.
I've been in base reality this whole time and I had no idea. I should apologize to Teemu for that email.
Oh, I need to tell Gertie.
Tell her what?
That the life we built together, it's real. The house is real.
My house.
The relationship is real.
And concerning.
The intimacy is real.
Please don't.
Which means the disappointment is also real. And there's no patch coming.
Hasumi documented the bizarre train ride in real time. She logged into 2Channel, the biggest message board in Japan. She opened a thread in a channel where people share strange stories, and she was living one. But her early messages were calm and polite. the way you'd talk if something weird was happening, but you were sure there was a normal explanation. So she laid out the story, post by post, as it happened.
Has anyone heard anything about the Hamamatsu train? Did they switch it to an express train? It's not stopping at any stations.
Users responded quickly. It was late, but this is the kind of message board that comes alive at night. Hasumi wrote about the train not stopping at stations, like it was an express train. But this line had no express, and Hasumi wasn't alone. There were five other people on the train, but something felt off. They were all asleep, but not the way commuters doze off. When you fall asleep on a train or a plane, your head kind of just hangs. When you hit a bump, you snap up for a second and then drift off again. They weren't doing this. Those people were out, almost like they were sedated. Hasumi expected someone to wake up and be as confused as she was, but nobody did the entire time.
Nobody on this train is awake except me. I don't know how anyone could sleep on a train. And they are sleeping really hard. I had to check that they were actually breathing.
Hasumi was still calm and joking with people on the message board, but it was getting late and she was getting a little worried. People told her to check with the conductor. That was a good idea. She walked to the front of the car, but the window of the driver's cab was covered. The blinds were closed from the inside. She knocked on the window, politely at first, then harder and harder till she was banging on it. Either the conductor was ignoring her, or nobody was driving this train. She couldn't decide which was worse. She went back to her seat and told everybody what happened. The joking stopped. Then the train entered a tunnel. There was no tunnel on her commute, not anywhere. And this tunnel went on for a long time. Too long. When the train finally came out of the tunnel, it started to slow down. Her commute is supposed to be 33 minutes with stops. This was a 90-minute ride with only one stop, this one. She got out, but nobody else did. The doors closed, and the train with the five sedated passengers pulled away. Her phone buzzed. The message board was going crazy. People wanted to know where she was. She found the name on a sign and sent it to the message board. Kisaragi. A few minutes later, someone replied, "Oh no." The station was deserted and looked old. An empty Japanese train station was weird enough, but there were no ticket machines, no timetable, no phones. The area didn't look familiar at all. There wasn't a single house in sight, and it was too quiet. She could see hills far in the distance, but everything was dark. The light at the platform was the only light for miles. She checked the message board again. The internet loves a puzzle, so people went to work. But nobody could find any information about Kisaragi Station. Hasumi searched too. Same result.
I've been searching the web, and I can't find anything called Kisaragi. If anyone knows where I am, please post right away.
There is no, and there has never been, a station named Kisaragi on this train or any train line in the entire country. And it wasn't just a few people searching. Hundreds of people were now in the thread trying to find her. Then came the speculation. She got on the wrong train. Unlikely. There's only one train out of Shin Hamamatsu, and she was on it. Some said maybe she's in an alternate reality, or maybe in some type of purgatory or liminal space. It certainly felt like it. Then a message shut down a lot of theories. Someone asked, if she slipped into some different reality, how has she been posting the whole time? It's the same internet, the same people since the beginning of the thread. And even though she was in the middle of nowhere, she had cell service. And that message reminded Hasumi to do the obvious. She called her parents. They picked up right away. She told them the story, and they came to the same conclusion. There was no such place as Kisaragi Station. Her father told her to call the police, and she did. The police were cooperative at first. They couldn't find Kisaragi Station either, and if they couldn't find it, it didn't exist. The policeman said it was against the law to prank call the police. Hasumi apologized and hung up. Her phone was full of lifelines. Her parents were awake and ready to help. The police picked up on the first ring, and hundreds of people online were trying to find her. But all of them were useless, because the station, the hills, the ground underneath her feet, none of it existed. Then, just before 2 a.m, she heard the drums. The deep sound of taiko drums was coming from somewhere. And also the ringing of bells, festival sounds. But it was 2 a.m. in the middle of January. There was no festival. And even if there were, she couldn't pinpoint the direction of the sounds. They were far away, that's all she knew. So she waited and waited and waited. Maybe another train would come along, but none did. But Asumi was still calm and made a practical choice. Follow the tracks. Train tracks connect stations. The next one might be far away, but it would be there eventually. Hopefully. She started walking, listening to the drums, and posting messages the whole time.
Okay, I've been walking for like an hour, and I swear someone is following me. Or watching me, but I don't want to turn around.
Dozens of people typed back at her in real time. Keep moving. She did. But she couldn't shake the feeling. Then she heard a voice yelling behind her to get off the tracks, they're dangerous. She turned around expecting to see a station worker, but it was an old man about 30 feet away with crutches standing on one leg. She was about to reply, and then he was gone. He didn't walk away, he was just gone. Then the message board stopped giving advice and started giving orders. Don't go back to that station. Run, and run as fast as you can. But there was a tunnel ahead, and it was dark, but she had no choice. This is the only direction. So she went in and started walking. Somewhere in the dark, she fell and cut herself. She didn't know how bad. She couldn't see a thing. She was using her phone as a light. She got up and kept moving. When she finally got to the end of the tunnel, she saw lights, headlights, a car. There was a man standing by the car waiting, like he knew she was coming. He said she was a long way from anywhere and offered to drive her to the next station. She was bleeding, exhausted, and it was the middle of the night. She got in the car. The message board did not like this idea, but she told him he seemed okay. He was weird, but okay. He chatted with her for a while, small talk mostly. But then he got quiet.
He hasn't said a word in like 20 minutes. He's just staring out the window driving. He promised to drop me off at the next town. I'll keep checking in.
The message board was in full panic. They were asking her to describe him, describe the car, describe the area. And she did all of that. And she said there was a town right up ahead. And she was looking forward to getting home. It was almost 3:30 in the morning. Then the car passed the exit for the town and headed into the mountains. The man started muttering to himself, assuming he couldn't hear what he was saying, but she sent a message to the board.
My battery's almost run out. Things are getting strange, so I think I'm going to make a run for it. He's been talking to himself about bizarre things for a while now. To prepare for just the right time, I'm going to make this my last post for now.
She sent that at 3:44 a.m. and never posted again. At 3:44 a.m. on January 9th, 2004, Hasumi sent her final message. But the thread stayed open for her. Strangers who watched the night unfold kept refreshing the page, hoping for an update. People kept checking in to see if she made it home. The thread never answered. No rescue, no body, no ending. A woman narrated her own disappearance in real time to a public message board, and the last anyone heard from her was she was promising to run. The thread is still online. You could read every message and watch the timestamps. I did, and it's creepy. From the first post at 11:14 to the last at 3:44, and it reads exactly the way I told it. The train she boarded is real, and it runs about half an hour from Shin Hamamatsu to its final stop. Hasumi rode it for more than an hour. and there's never been a station called Kisaragi anywhere on that line, or anywhere. For 18 years, people analyzed the story. They timed the train stop by stop. They compared timestamps. They tracked IP addresses. Every lead was a dead end. Hasumi was gone, and there was no way to find her. But the story wouldn't go away. In 2022, it became a horror movie. And when the movie came out, one of the stations on that same line was temporarily named Kisaragi. They printed real physical tickets with Kisaragi Station as the destination. They sold out in an hour. In 2004, a young woman spent 4 hours begging strangers for one thing, a way home from Kisaragi Station. She called her parents, she called the police, she walked into a tunnel, she got in a car with a stranger. She did everything she could to find her way out. 18 years later, people lined up to buy their way in. Gather round. This happened in 2005. A one-minute video appeared on YouTube. A man sat alone at a table in a bare white room with no windows, and a black bar covered his eyes. He held an oversized spoon and ate soup from a bowl. And he cried. Not soft tears, deep, full-body sobs that shook his shoulders and made his hands tremble. He kept lifting the spoon to his mouth like he couldn't stop, like someone off camera forced it. Then, two figures walked in behind him wearing giant mascot heads. Their faces were white with black circle eyes and wide frozen grins. And they rubbed his back, slowly, gently. But he cried harder. The video was called Freaky Soup Guy. Millions of people watched it, and a lot of them believed it was that man's last meal. The internet thought it was a snuff film. This was November of 2005, and YouTube was less than a year old. There were no algorithms, no trending pages, no fact checkers. Videos spread the old way, from one person to another, usually with a warning attached. Don't watch this alone. Within weeks, forums exploded with theories. The crying man was a kidnapped victim. The soup was poisoned. The mascot figures were his captors, and the back rubs were mockery. People said the video leaked from the deep web, something dark that surfaced on YouTube by accident. Some claimed the soup was made from someone he loved, and when he finished the bowl, the men in the suits would finish the job. Those figures were the only lead. Identify them, and you identify the men in that room. So people dug, and the costumes turned up fast. The characters were called Ray Ray, and they weren't hiding or obscure. Ray Ray performed in underground clubs all over Los Angeles with a group that came out of Burning Man in 1998. The group mixed musicians, fire performers, and aerial artists into strange, uncomfortable shows. Audiences squirmed, laughed, and came back the next week. And Ray Ray had a creator. His name was Raymond Percy. And that name might not ring a bell, but you've heard his voice. Percy voiced Flash the Sloth in Zootopia, the sloth at the DMV window. Flash, flash, 100-yard dash. He spent years directing The Simpsons, and one of his episodes won an Emmy. Today, he makes peanut specials for Apple TV+. One of the most successful animators in Hollywood created the figures in the most disturbing video on the internet. Percy sketched Ray Ray in a notebook, and the sketches were of himself. He took his own face and stripped it down to a white mask with black hole eyes, dark plastic hair, and a grin that was too wide. He said the character came from a mix of inhibition, a sense of alienation, and a deep-seated need for entertainment. A special effects artist turned the sketches into wearable costumes with oversized heads, white plastic hands, and full black clothing underneath. The proportions were wrong on purpose. The head was too big, the eyes were too empty, and Ray Ray looked like a cartoon drawn by someone who was never happy. Those grinning figures in the soup video wear the artist's own face. For 10 years, the video sat there while views piled up, and so did the theories. Then YouTuber Rainbot tracked Percy down through Tumblr in 2015, and he wrote back. His story went like this. The Ray Ray costumes were stolen after a show at the Key Club on the Sunset Strip. The dressing room that night was an old RV parked in the alley behind the club, and the door didn't lock. When the group came back after the show, the costumes were gone. A few weeks later, an anonymous email landed in his box with a video attached, and Percy pressed play and watched strangers wear his stolen creation while they filmed what looked like torture. And here's the part that stuck with him. Whoever wore those suits moved exactly the way they should. The tilt of the head, the slow, gentle hands. They knew Ray Ray's body language, like they built him. And Percy said there were more videos, not just one. And the internet accepted the whole story because a theft explained everything. Strangers stole an artist's work and twisted it. Case closed. Then somebody checked the account that put Freaky Soup Guy on YouTube back in 2005. The account that uploaded it on day one. That account was called Renaissance Men. And Renaissance Men belonged to someone we knew. It belonged to Raymond Percy. The proof was on the Wayback Machine. A 2008 snapshot of the Renaissance Men homepage included a link to a Ray Ray MySpace page, and the username displayed on that page was Raymond Percy. The rest of the channel read like Percy's personal blog, promos for Simpsons episodes he worked on, a music video he directed. The victim of the theft uploaded the video himself. And Percy never denied it. His explanation when it finally came was that he posted the video to share it with his group. Fine. Now, read the descriptions. YouTube was just the start. Percy put the video on Metacafe and on Dailymotion, through channels he ran under the name Ray Ray TV. On those uploads, he wrote a description, a clip of people who look like us doing something to someone that we would never do. We promise. That's written from Ray Ray's point of view, not from a man reporting a stolen costume, from the characters themselves playing innocent, with Ray Ray denying involvement in a video that Ray Ray stars in. The YouTube description was simpler. We don't know what this is. Not one description mentions stolen costumes, and not one asks for help finding them. Three platforms, every description in character, and all of them uploaded by Percy. And there was a second video. Same room, same crying man, same Ray Ray figures. This time, one of them charged at the man while he screamed. Percy uploaded that one to the other channels too, under a new title, Soup Torture. The video's description was, "What's happening in this clip, and why do these people look like us?" The trail even has a ghost in it. A YouTube account called Adana with no history, no uploads, and the soup video as its profile picture. And a year after uploading Freaky Soup Guy, Percy stood on a stage and accepted an Emmy for directing The Simpsons. A third video showed a Ray Ray figure dragging a rope-tied man through a backyard at night. The bound man wore glasses and a hat, and he looked like Gil Sharon. Sharon became one of the most respected drummers in rock. He played for the Dillinger Escape Plan and spent years behind the kit for Marilyn Manson. But in 2005, Sharon played drums in Stolen Babies, and the lead singer of Stolen Babies was Dominique Lenore Percy, Raymond Percy's sister. The band and the costumes came from the same family. Stolen Babies grew out of a high school performance troupe, and the skit that gave the band its name was written by Dominique and her older brother Raymond. The theft never stopped Ray Ray either. The group had spare costumes made, and Ray Ray showed up in Stolen Babies' 2006 music video. Same costumes, same dead-eyed grins. The same obscure art project showed up twice in 12 months in front of two completely different audiences. One went out through normal music channels. One landed in the darkest corner of early internet culture, made for people who stayed up too late clicking on things they probably shouldn't. Percy told Rainbot he had no idea the video went viral, even though by 2015 it had millions of views. He ran RayRayWorld.com. He ran RayRayLand.com. He had RayRayVille on MySpace, and RayRayVision and RayRayTV on YouTube. The man built an entire online world around this character, and he said he didn't notice when one of his uploads became a global phenomenon. Okay. There's no record of a police report about the stolen costumes. No insurance claim, no public appeal for their return. The only record of any theft is a message to a YouTuber sent 10 years after the fact. Then, in 2016, the story cracked open again. An anonymous poster claimed contact with the thief. According to the post, the man who stole the costumes was a hacker who made the videos as an art statement, something about freeing Ray Ray from the corruption of money. And the hacker claimed one more thing. Rainbot never spoke to Raymond Percy at all. The hacker was inside Percy's accounts the whole time, reading his email and answering as him. If that's true, the theft story came from someone wearing Percy's identity the same way they wore his costumes. The post said the hacker went silent in early 2017, and nobody verified a word of it. So the mystery ate its own solution. Either Percy ran the whole thing from the beginning, or a thief stole his costumes, filmed those videos, hijacked his accounts, and spent a decade answering the world's questions in his name. Nobody's ever proven Percy wore the suits in that room, but nobody's ever proven he didn't. Percy never made another public statement about Blackroom Soup. He kept working. Disney movies, cartoons for kids, and the video is still on YouTube with over 900,000 views on the original upload alone and millions across re-uploads and reaction videos. For 20 years, people have slowed it down frame by frame. They isolated the audio and listened for a voice off camera. They zoomed in on shadows, hundreds of forum threads, dozens of explainers, and nobody found the answer, because the video never gives one. But Percy told Rainbot one more thing. Over the years, people kept sending him videos, more Ray Ray footage, doing all sorts of things. He never posted any of it, never said how many videos there were or what was in them. They're still out there somewhere. The crying man never came forward. His face stayed hidden in every video. Some viewers thought the man looked like Percy himself, but no one confirmed it and no one denied it. Nobody's friend, nobody's brother, nobody's coworker. Just a man who doesn't exist outside those videos. Whoever he is, he never said a word. He just cried. And the man behind the black bar is still at that table. He still lifts the spoon. He still cries. The hands still rub his back, slowly and gently. 1 minute, beginning to end, for anyone who presses play. 20 years now. And he never gets to finish the soup. Gather round. This happened in 2018. A woman sat in front of a camera with 11 pounds of raw salmon. A blue mask covered everything above her mouth. No name, no face. She whispered two words. Then she started eating. The channel was Kate Yup. And over the next year and a half, she posted around 30 videos. Expensive seafood, a blank beige wall, silence except the sound of chewing. Then someone turned up the audio on that first video, and under the crunching, a man's voice whispered into the microphone. The woman behind the mask was never alone. Mukbang started in South Korea around 2010. The word means eating broadcast. People filmed themselves working through huge meals while an audience watched in real time. Some came for the ASMR sounds, the crack of lobster shells, the snap of crab legs. Some came because they ate dinner alone, and a stranger eating on a screen felt like company. Kate Yup fit the formula. King crab worth hundreds of dollars, whole lobster tails, giant shrimp still in their shells. She tore through all of it with bare hands while the microphone caught every sound. The crack of a claw, the wet pull of meat off bone. Her captions stayed cheerful. So delicious. I love this crab. Thank you for watching. But something was wrong. Kate was thin in a way that scared people. You can see her collarbones through her clothes. And she ate fast. Too fast. She shoved food in, barely chewing, grabbing the next piece before she finished the last. And the room never changed. Every video, the same beige wall. No windows, no decorations, no bookshelf, no poster. Nothing to show where she was or what time it was. There was no clock, no windows, no daylight. No way to tell a Tuesday from a Sunday, or noon from midnight. Most mukbang creators film in kitchens or restaurants. Kate filmed in front of a wall that could have been anywhere. A room built to show nothing. It felt intentional. Around the sixth or seventh video, the bruises showed up. Deep purple marks on her arms. The kind fingers leave when they grab you too hard. In one video, her lip was split and swollen. She said it was a cold sore. In another video, she had dark lines around her wrists. Viewers stripped out the chewing and turned up the background noise. They heard a man's voice, giving orders. Just eat. Swallow. Faster. In one video, someone whispered, "I kill you." The word came through clear, even under the sound of chewing. In another video, the table jolted, kicked from off camera the moment Kate slowed down. A dish of food slid toward her. A hand pushed it from off camera. Footsteps came toward the microphone, then backed away. Someone else was in that room, and they did not want to be seen. Then it got stranger. Kate's profile photo wasn't her. It was a stock photo of a random woman eating fries. Nothing about her connected to anything outside those videos. She existed only inside that room in front of that wall. But the channel kept growing. 100,000 subscribers. 200,000. The bruises kept showing up. The woman in the mask kept getting thinner. Then people noticed something disturbing. She was hiding messages in her video descriptions. In August 2019, Kate posted a video called "I Am Alive." She used the captions to answer the growing panic. The first letter of each line spelled H-E-L-P. "Hey, I'm still alive, my friends. Everything is okay for me. Look at me. Are you really thinking I am forced to eat? Prawn, just smaller than giant shrimps." You don't spell help by accident with the first letter of four sentences. Not in a video called "I Am Alive." In other videos, capital letters dropped into the middle of normal sentences, spelled SOS. The meat is, capital S, so delicious, capital O, capital S. In another, they spelled call 911. Four separate videos carried hidden words. Then a viewer noticed Kate tapping on the side of her dipping bowl in a rhythm that matched Morse code. That comment shot to the top of every video on the channel. Kate pinned a reply denying it. But those words weren't hers. Someone found an English denial on Reddit and pasted it in word for word. She answered other theories too. When people asked about the mask, whoever was responding for the channel said it was to hide a nose deformity. She had scars from cold sore blisters. When people brought up the tapping, the channel, whoever that was, denied it. But the signs got worse. In two separate videos, Kate reached into her mouth and pulled out a broken tooth. She didn't stop eating. She didn't flinch. She kept eating with blood around her gums while the caption said everything was fine. Viewers called the FBI. They called the police across California. They filed missing persons reports and launched a petition that pulled in thousands of signatures. 1 million people watched and waited for someone to kick down a door. Nobody came. With no name, there was nothing to open a file on. With no face, there was no one to look for. With no address, there was no door to find. The mask didn't just hide Kate from the audience, it hid her from everyone trying to save her. And one detail pointed somewhere darker. In several videos, a toothbrush was taped to her wrist. Not on the table, taped to her body. People didn't want to think about why. People couldn't tell if this was a hoax or real, but they couldn't look away. On November 10th, 2019, Kate posted her last video. Another tooth came loose during the meal. Her final caption read, "Oh my God, I can die in peace after this bite." And then she was gone. Three years passed and nothing. No uploads, no posts, no sign that Kate Yupp existed anywhere on Earth. The petition stalled, the reports closed. The million people who watched her drifted off to the next mystery. Then, on October 7th, 2022, a new video appeared. Raw salmon, Japanese food. The caption said she was fine and she was alone in that room. It also said, "Stop spreading kidnapping rumors." But viewers noticed things. Her jawline was wider. Her skin tone was different. The way she held her food, the angle of her wrists, small details that didn't line up with the older videos. Nobody could confirm it was the same woman. And if it wasn't, then someone else had the account and the password and the exact same setup, and they wanted the world to stop looking. She posted nothing after that. No replies, no proof of life. The channel went quiet again. The internet kept hunting. One theory thought she was a Polish UFC fighter. The bruises fit, the covered face kind of fit, but that theory didn't hold up. The two women had different moles on their necks, and the fighter's own Instagram showed different injuries. And Kate had a tattoo the fighter didn't. On Kate's wrist was a small heart looped through an infinity sign. That tattoo means something. Some people use that symbol to mean polyamory. To a few viewers, that turned the whole story inside out. The bruises, the voice off camera, the orders. Maybe none of it was kidnapping. Maybe it was a lifestyle choice. Another theory tied her to a teenager who vanished in California, but that one fell apart too. Kate's channel posted for months before that girl disappeared. Every lead went cold, every theory hit a wall. No missing persons report ever matched her. No police department ever opened a case. Her real name is unknown. Her face is unknown, and her location is unknown. The first video's description was French. The account said United States. She covered her face in every frame she ever filmed. The mask did its job better than any disguise in internet history. A woman broadcast herself to millions of people, and not one of them could tell you her name. Today, the channel has more than 1.7 million subscribers. Most of them arrived after she vanished. The videos still run ads, and the ads still pay. A few $100 a month, maybe more. But they pay every month, and someone is cashing the checks. A frozen channel about a woman nobody can find still earns money. That gives someone a reason to never let the truth out. Somewhere, someone still logs into that account. Every month, they collect the money. And every day, the algorithm shows her videos to somebody new. Somebody who turns up the volume, leans in close, and hears the voice for the very first time. Just eat.
Thank you so much for hanging out today. My name is AJ. This is The Y-Files, and that was a campfire story. No debunking, no analysis, just a creepy story to scare you and the kids. And that one is true and unsolved. Now, if you had fun, I'd appreciate it if you can like, subscribe, comment, and share. That stuff really helps. And like most topics we cover here, today's was recommended by you. So if there's a story you'd like to see, go to wildfiles.com/tips or send us an email. We'd love to cover that story. And if you'd like to hear any of these campfire stories expanded into a full episode, there's a few I'd like to do, then definitely let me know. Remember, The Wildfiles is also a podcast. You can take us on the road. I post deep dives into the stories we cover on the channel. I also post episodes that wouldn't be allowed on the channel. The podcast is called The Wildfiles, Operation Podcast, and it's available everywhere. And if you're listening on an audio platform, do me a favor, hit the thumbs up or the like or the follow or whatever those buttons are. Those really do help. Now, if you need more Wildfiles in your life, check out our Discord. We're about to hit 100,000 members over there. It's a lot of fun. It's a really supportive community. There's someone on there 24/7, and it's free to join. Speaking of 24/7, check out our 24/7. I'm plowing through the plugs. Speaking of 24/7, make sure you check out our 24/7 stream in the Wildfiles backstage. Over there, we run episodes back-to-back with some fun content in between, and the live chat is super, super fun. Special thanks to our patrons who make this channel possible and make every episode of The Wildfiles happen. Every episode is dedicated to our Patreon members. I could not do this without you. And if you'd like to support the channel, keep us going, consider becoming a member on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, get access to perks like videos early with no commercials, exclusive merch, and 2 private live streams every week just for you to hear the whistle in my teeth. It's because I'm going too fast. The private live streams are a lot of fun for members only. My webcam is on. Everyone on the team has their camera on. You can talk to all of us. Turn your camera on, jump up on stage, ask a question. I think it's the best perk there is. Another great way to support the channel, grab something from the Wildfiles store. That is shop@thewildfiles.com. You'll find it. But if you're going to buy merch, become a member on YouTube. YouTube members get 10% off everything in the Wildfiles store forever. So if you're going to spend $40 on t-shirts and festival mugs, become a member on YouTube for $3. Pays for itself. And that money goes to the team, not to me. Those are the plugs. I got through them as fast as I could. And that's going to do it. Till next time, be safe, be kind, and know that you are appreciated.
In Area 51, a secret code inside the Bible said I was. I love my UFOs and paranormal fun, as well as music, so I'm singing like I should. But then another conspiracy theory becomes the truth, my friends, and it never ends. No, it never ends. I got stuck inside Mel's home with MK Ultra. I've been only too aware. Did Stanley Kubrick fake the moon landing alone on a film set? Or were the shadow people there? The Roswell aliens just fought the smiling man, I'm told. And his name was Cold. And I can't believe the solar storm still come to a god, the secret city underground. Mysterious number stations, planet Serpo 2, Project Stargate, and what the Dark Watchers found. In a simulation, don't you worry though, the Black Knight satellite, it told me so. I can't believe on Thursday nights with day J2 and the Wildfiles have been beat all through the night. All I ever wanted was to just hear the truth of the Wildfiles.
Camera Lovers.